Also, that Denmark, the modern form of Danemark, means Dan's mark. And that, too, to the people of the lost birthright, the very people who have hunted most for the waymarks which God told them to set up. All that Scandinavian country and much more once belonged to Denmark, or Denmark, which is now reduced to a comparatively small region. When dying, Jacob called his sons together about him that he might tell them what their posterity should become in the last days. And remember, Jacob's prophecy concerning them was a prophecy of what they were to be in the last days. Says concerning Dan, Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Then immediately following is the expression, Dan shall be a serpent, by the way, with the better translation. In this prophecy, Jacob does not say, as many seem to think, that Dan in the last days shall become the ruler of the other tribes of Israel. For God has said, Judah is my lawgiver, and the scepter shall not depart from Judah. But what Jacob does say is that Dan, as one of the tribes of Israel, shall render a verdict, or judge his people Israel. How? I'm reading from Judah's Scepter and Joseph's Birthright. By J.H. Allen. How? Because he shall, like a serpent, leave his mark or trail that Israel may find it in the last days, and that they may say, there is one of the lost tribes of Israel here. When this verdict has been rendered, then Dan will have judged his people Israel, as a judge marks a piece of evidence. It may be that the word Israel, as used in the prophecy above, is used in its broadest sense, and includes both the house of Israel and the house of Judah. What matters? When Dan was born, Rachel said, God hath judged me, hath also heard my voice, and hath given me a son. Therefore she called his name Dan. The key to the manner of judging is in the use of it by Rachel. An identified response by God to his promise. She calls that being judged by God and receiving a son, so she calls him Dan. The word in Hebrew means judge, and Daniel means the judge of God, thus Dan, judge, and El, God. Hence Daniel, the judge of God. Thus Jacob, in his last days prophecy concerning the tribe of Dan, plays on their tribal name, and says the judge shall judge, or in other words, the Dan shall Dan. What? Dan shall Dan. Yes, and he certainly has Danned, and Danned, and Danned, and kept on Danning, until he's given abundant evidence to his people that he is one of the tribes of Israel, for they now see the mark of his trail. Dan, stamped everywhere. It is now more than 250 years. This was written in 1902. It is now more than 250 years since a Danish peasant who with his daughter was following their plow in their native country when the daughter's plow turned up a bright and glittering something which upon examination proved to be a golden trumpet. It was taken to the authorities, identified as one of the seven golden trumpets used in the altar service of the Temple of Jerusalem. This trumpet, placed in the National Museum at Copenhagen, is ornamented with a lily and a pomegranate, the lily being the national flower of Egypt, the pomegranate that of Palestine. Interestingly enough, we just voted a national flower, the rose. Thus showing the half-Egyptian and half-Israelitish origin of the birthright nation of which the tribe of Dan was a part. Just before Moses died, he, like Jacob, gave prophecies concerning each tribe in Israel. What did he say of Dan? Moses said, Dan is a lion's whelp. He shall leap from Bashan. Bashan was on Palestinian territory, hence Dan is to leap from that country. But it is left for history to tell where that leap landed him. It is a well-authenticated fact that after the coast colonies of Dan and Simeon knew that their king and their brethren were defeated, because they were part of the lost tribes, I mean, they were part of the ten-tribe kingdom called Israel, but their king and the interior colonies had been defeated, then they embarked in their ships and fled to the islands of the sea, which are the northwest of Europe. For the people who are known by all historians to have been the first settlers of Ireland are called Tuatha De Dananns. First settlers might not be accurate in this case because they threw out the Firbolgs. But by the time Irish history received any prominence, when they were conquered by the Milesian kings of Spain, they were known as the Tuatha De Dananns, which literally means the tribe of Dan. These Danans of Ireland correspond to the Danai of the Greeks and the Latin Danus and the Hebrew Dan. The Lord, by the mouth of the psalmist, declares, quote, "He breaketh or driveth the ships of Tarshish with an east wind." That means westward. If it's Spain, west of Spain. "As these Sidonians from the port of Sidon," interesting, isn't it? Companion city of Tyre. "Are driven like Ephraim west by an east wind. They not only leave their trail along the shores of the Mediterranean in dens and dins and dons, but on the peninsula of Spain. Just before passing out through the strait into the great waters, they left a mark that remains unto this day." Medina. Sidonia. "That Dan's leap landed him in Ireland is evident, for in that island we find to this day Don's Lue, Dan Sour, Dan Moniz, Dan Monism, Dundalk, Dundrum, Donegal Bay, Donegal City with Dunglow and Londonderry just north of them. There is also Dingy, Dungarvan, and Dunsmore, which means more Dans. And really there are so many more that we have no space for them except to mention Dangan Castle, where the Duke of Wellington was born, and to say that Dun, with two N's, in the Irish language, means just what Dan means in the Hebrew, that is, a judge." Have you forgotten how I teach with the Gestalt Theory of Learning? I just want to hit you with a gob. I teach like Cathart. The difference is, something's supposed to happen behind those globs where you are. "It is remarkable there is not only a river Don in Scotland, but also a river Doon. That there is also a river Don in England. Also that these countries are full of Dans, Dons, and Duns as Ireland, for in them are not only such names as Dundee, Dunkirk, Dunbar, Dunraven, and many others, but the name of Dan, the son of Jacob, son of Isaac, son of Abraham, lies buried in the name of their capital cities, Edinburgh and London. Surely Dan hath danned or judged among his people, and thus fulfilled the sure word of prophecy." We're told that in the days of Solomon, every 3 years came the ships of Tarshish. Every 3 years. 860 years before Christ, we're told that Jonah went to Joppa. People read Jonah's prophecy, make no connection that Joppa was in the territory of the ancient Lot of Dan. How many of you know he went to Joppa? Read Jonah enough to know that? And he caught a ship to Tarshish. Remember that? Interesting that he went to a seacoast city of the territory of Dan before he was to go to Nineveh, the capital of the Assyrians, and prophesy their doom. He went to an ancient seacoast city in the territory of Dan to seek passage on a ship to Tarshish, the edge of the world. Jonah went to Joppa, a seaport within the borders of Dan, and found a ship going to Tarshish, that he took passage in it to go to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. Just how long the ships of Palestinian seaports had been replenishing or colonizing the isles, even before the Assyrian captivity of the ten tribes is not known, but historians place the time as early as 900 B.C. This gives abundant time for some prince of the Zara branch of Judah's family to have preceded Israel to the Isles. And the scripture says in prophecy concerning these wandering tribes, their king shall go before them. And to have a large colony even before the birthright, people went to Assyria, an event which did not occur until 721 B.C. That one of these princes did precede Israel to the Isles of the Sea is evident. First, because God says he did. The prophecy said their king would go before them. Second, because it's recorded in the Milesian records of Ireland that the prince Heromone, to whom Tiatephi was married, brought there by Jeremiah, I told you to get back to him, was a prince of the Tuatha De Danans, made there prince because he conquered them as the king of the Milesians. Mark this. If that prince was a prince of the tribe of Dan, and authentic history declares he was, then he was a prince of the family of Judah, for there can be no prince of Dan other than the prince of the royal family of his race. And that family has but one fountainhead, Judah, the fourth son of Jacob and Leah, to whom pertains the scepter blessing. Come over here, Mick, please. This rule seems to have worked both ways, for the family ensign of Judah is a lion. Don't get this picture framed, but don't use it till I call for it. Help you out a little, Mick, by moving around. This rule seems to have worked both ways. For the family ensign of Judah is a lion. And Moses prophesied that Dan would be a lion's whelp. As a matter of course, the ensign of the family, the royal family, would go with Judah wherever they went. Thus it became associated with the Tuatha De Danans, the tribe of Dan, and time found its way into their national seal. Here it is. Take the picture. The figure in this national seal is a lion's whelp with a serpent's tail. The largest of these on this national seal is Denmark, that used to rule over all the Scandinavians. The other two are Norway and Sweden, which were at that time of this seal under the dominion of Denmark. Lion's whelp with a serpent's tail. Accidents of history. Here's another book. Who in the world would think you would find something about Dan, in a book with this title? Chemovision. From Farm to Factory to Fortune. By Dr. William J. Hale. How in the world would you find anything about Dan in that? Well, let's see. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
I just want the gestalt to land at what has been available, and nobody ever teaches on it. Because if they do, some nut that has nothing to do that's positive, he only attacks people by hearing a little of what they say, not smart enough to figure out what they're trying to gestalt, and immediately, British Israelite, British Israelite, British Israelite, name calling. Turn the cooler on, I get hot thinking about it. Chemovision. What's that got to do with Dan? From farm to factory to fortune. Yet right here, chapter 4. While yet in Egypt, the tribes of Dan and Judah became primarily interested in seagoing and its accompanying promise of trade. To Judah was born Shelah, and the twin sons, Zara and Pheres. The line of Perez is clearly traceable through Boaz and Jesse to David, the ruler of all Israel. But Zara left Egypt for Iberia in Spain sometime around 1700 B.C. As I said, when the rulers left and the rest of the people were enslaved, the ruling by foreign rulers of Egypt, which were the shepherd kings, the brethren of Joseph and their descendants, because of the immediacy of the prophecy of Jacob that was given down in Egypt, when Joseph's power was passed as a scepter, the blessing of Jacob would make it go to Zara. When the upper pharaoh, or the pharaoh of upper Egypt, conquered these foreign rulers, the mass remained in slavery, the rulers fled. Zara of the Judah line fled then some 100 to 200 years prior to the Exodus of Moses. Zara had five sons. Darda, called Dardanus by the historian Josephus, who founded the city of Ilium, or Troy, by the Hellespont. Another son started a colony in Spain known as Zaragoza, modern Saragossa. Funny nobody connects Gaza and the Gaza Strip and Zara to Zaragoza. A great grandson of Zara, Calcol or Kecrops, is said to have founded Athens about 1582 BC, 6 years after the fall of Aten worship in Egypt. From Calcol is traced one of the lines of the British royal family. The forebears here trekking from Athens and arriving in Britain prior to the 8th century. We've also followed through the chronicles Brutus of the Trojan line descended from Dara, or Darda, or Dardanus. The most distinguished of these early arrivals, as later to be noted, was Ecgwed the Heromon, who took up residence in the north of Ireland. From the tribe of Dan, Danus, in about 1500 B.C., sailed for the Aegean Islands, established a colony at Argos in the Greek peninsula called Peloponnesus. The best Greek traditions relate of these incomings of leaders from out of the delta country of the Nile. In between the years 1582 and 1500 B.C. That's about 50 years to 100 years prior to Moses leading them out of Egypt and the exodus of the slaves. Early Aegean and Mycenaean civilization had been in existence since the late Neolithic Age near 3500 B.C., Ceramic art had developed extensively, particularly in the island of Crete, around about 2500 B.C. But somewhere in the neighborhood of 1400 B.C., a group of people known as the Achaeans overran Greece. These Achaeans were the first to use bronze in that region. They drove out the Mycenaeans and pressed the Danai inland against Troy, the famous trading center on the coast of Asia Minor. By 1184 B.C., Troy was sacked. The Mycenaeans of the southern shores fled to eastern Mediterranean shores and established the well-known Philistine colonies. Others betook themselves westward into central Italy to establish an Etruscan colony. Now, some modern archaeologists trying to say the Etruscans were local to Italy. They're not too convincing. This strange, so-called undecipherable culture in early Italy. The LA Times carried an article about them just this past week, pages long. The defeated Trojans, or Dardani, withdrew to Byzantium, modern Istanbul, and later divided. One group, led by Brutus of the Darda line, sailed for Italy, remaining only a short time when they corralled some 3,000 soldiers, having gone back and led that rebellion, and set sail for Britain. They found harbor up the Thames River, where they located a spot that offered the same advantage as their old settlement, hence they named it New Troy. But Landen, or London, was the ancient name of the spot, and actually preferred by the natives. Hence, in Roman days, the name Londinium came into use, and New Troy, or Caer Troy, passed from use, but your most ancient maps know and record that it was first founded as New Troy. En route, the party of Brutus landed in France, then to Torbay, the oldest seaport of Devon. 12 miles inland from Torbay on the Dart stands Totnes. You can see it today, and we'll see it if we go there on a teaching tour, where there is embedded in the pavement of Fore Street at Westgate a granite block bearing the inscription, "This is Brutus Stone," where Brutus first set foot in 1175 B.C. after the fall of Troy. Thousands go to Britain. They don't even know that's there. Millions live in Britain and don't even know it's there. Another group of Trojans, led by Aeneas, went first to Thrace and then sailed for Sicily and next to the mouth of the Tiber, where Aeneas was received by Latinus. Following his marriage to Lavinia, the daughter of Latinus, we record the founding of the colony of Lavinium. Chemovision. From farm to factory to fortune. Look at that cover. Ears of corn, a highway, and a silo. No, isn't that what you see? I'm reading chapter 4. Let's keep going. Am I boring you? Others of the Trojans trekked up the Danube River valley and moved westward into Gaul, establishing an extensive colony of what later came to be known as Franks. Among their leaders were Priam and Hector and Polydorus. The latter is said to have been an ancestor of Clovis and Charlemagne. The Trojans who removed to Sparta became known as Lacedaemonians, or Lacedaemonians. Their seal and the banner of Dan were identical. An eagle with a dragon in its claws. It is also reported that a number of fugitives from Troy journeyed as far as Norway, arriving there about 780 B.C. Just ought to throw some poor gambler in Reno into a tizzy. Reno just joined us. I ain't stopping. I'm going on. Is that right, you?
Yes, sir.
Still others of the Trojans were led by Memnon. That old boy had some descendants. They included Thor and eventually Odin. Sailed across the Black Sea, settled by the mouth of the river Tanais, the modern River Don, where they came in touch with still earlier immigrants of their same kindred. Among these latter were many of the tribe of Dan, originating in the Delta country of the Nile and in the seaport city of Jaffa. Likewise, a number of the tribe of Simeon, coming both by sea and by overland route around the eastern end of the Black Sea. Chemovision. Does that mean he took a drug and saw all this, or what? A vision induced by chemistry? Chemovision. Can you see some old guy tired of plowing? Took some acid? To the west of these, Don River settlers was an extensive colony of Gomeridae, descendants of Gomer, centered in the Crimea region. Together, these colonies grew into a powerful group called the Gemira by the Assyrians and Kimeroi by the Greeks. Their language took on more of the Iranian characteristics. Am I boring you? Following the arrival of the children of Israel in Palestine, there was no abatement in wanderlust. By 1400 B.C., many of the Danann, southern Danites, together with a few from the tribe of Asher and many Phoenicians sailed for the land of Iberia, or modern Spain. There the Hebrews established a number of colonies, notably Iberia on the river Iberus, Tarsus in southwestern Spain at the mouth of the Wadi al-Hibr, River of the Hebrews, or modern Guadalquivir, an equivalent to Seville by the sea. The Phoenicians established the colony of Gadira, modern Cadiz, or Cadiz, founded about 1038 B.C., and Corduba, modern Cordova, and Carthage on the north coast of Africa, founded about 813 B.C. This is fascinating. Came a vision. Amazing what comes out of my book bag. Though vast in value was the output of gold and silver mines in Spain as suppliers for King Solomon. Nice ash. Look at that. Finally got one going. Nice one. Though vast in value was the output of gold and silver mines in Spain as suppliers for King Solomon, not alone from Spain, but from the land of Ophir in the east, there arose jealousies and strife among the Hebrews. Not alone from internal contentions, but from increased taxation assessed against them. The glorious era of Phoenician relations was doomed and came to an inglorious end. The Hebrews became so weakened they could no longer resist their enemies. The breakup among the Hebrews brought an end to the trading relations with the West. The ensuing revolt of the 10 northern tribes under Jeroboam in 970 B.C. marked the beginning of disintegration among the colonies of the Phoenician compact. But highest praise must be bestowed on those early Phoenician settlers who stood out so nobly against all hazards. Nothing appeared to daunt them or distract them from a common goal, an island in the west promised to them by their ancestors. Tarshish continued for a span, even after a section of its inhabitants calling themselves Tuatha De Danann, of blonde hair and blue eyes, sailed for the north of Ireland, which land they called Hibernia, or Erin. In Irish documents, this clan is well described. Still earlier colonies of Phoenicianites had already landed in the north of Ireland and had given the name Ulad, modern Ulster, to this particular locality. Naturally, these earlier Phoicianites opposed the landing of the colony of the Tuatha De Danann. However, the latter defeated the former in open combat and succeeded in securing a foothold. When the two factions discovered they possessed the same ancestry, spoke the same language, worshipped the same Baal, they gave way to full amalgamation. The northeastern coastal strip of Ireland emerged as the first habitable portion of the island following retreat of the last ice cap. Limestone shores protected by capping basalt made landings possible in counties Antrim and Down. A sea people known as Pomorians are reported among the earliest inhabitants. These were followed by the Firbolgs of Phoicianic origin. Of the Phoenician colonies, Gadara appeared the hardiest. Nonetheless, with lapse of time, even this colony migrated to the north. The language of all of these Phoicianites underwent modification till it took on a form that has become known as Punic. In fact, many from Carthage were constantly traveling back and forth to Spain. Following 480 B.C., an expedition under the Carthaginian Hamilco was sent to Spain to explore the west coast, but Hamilco found little. Practically the entire population had absconded. Later excursions by Carthaginians prior to the destruction of Carthage by the Romans in 146 B.C. only contributed to the swarms of Phoicianites in their northern drift. Now the founders of the city of Miletus. in southwestern Asia Minor are reported as having come directly from the eastern shores of the Mediterranean and to have been of Pheno-Canaanitic origin. The city of Miletus enjoyed an enviable position as maritime and commercial leader. In the course of time, many of its citizens set sail for the west. These adventurers called themselves the sons of Melide, a descendant of Gedalias, son of Gedil. After rounding Gibraltar to the north, they settled for a generation or two at a western point in Spain, founding the city of Brigantia. But their goal was that western island promised to their ancestor Gedalias. They carried a sacred banner on which was inscribed a serpent and the rod of Moses. They could have been none other than a section of the tribe of Gad. Under their leaders, these same adventurers sailed north to the upper tip of Iran, where in 750 B.C. they came into combat with the Tuatha De Danann of Elad and were actually compelled to defeat the latter before gaining a foothold on the shore. In brief order, these two Pheno-Canaanitic races melded and became known as the Gedels. At the dawn of authentic history, the north of Ireland was found to be populated by a cultured and powerful people called Gadil, or Gadil, as written in northern Antrim County, and Gwydil, as written in south Antrim and County Down. In modern English, it's spelled Gael. And the Gaelics. The tribe of Simeon early sensed the threatened approach of the Assyrians. They were nevertheless momentarily secure by reason of their remote location in southern Palestine. At all events, it's recorded that in the time of Hezekiah's reign over Judea, 717 to 688 B.C., 1 Chronicles 4, the tribe of Simeon, together with many Amorite associates, abandoned their precarious territory and moved over to the east in the valley of Gedor and in Shira, modern Maan in Transjordan. From this point, they journeyed north as far as the eastern shores of the Black Sea by the river Cobus, modern Kopi, which empties into the Black Sea from the western stretches of the Caucasus Mountains. Within a few years, these Simeonites drifted to the northwest around the northeastern corner of the Black Sea and amalgamated with the Gomeridi as well as with some of their kinfolk, the Danites, already in the Crimean or Crimean district. As previously stated, these inhabitants of the north shore of the Black Sea were early known as Kimmeroi by the Greeks, ultimately the Sumerians. The Keta, or Keta of Syria, and Asia Minor were recognized as far back as 1700 B.C. in Mizraic inscriptions as a cultured race of mixed Turanian, Semitic, and Hamitic stock. They were known in later days as Hittites, but to the Assyrians were known as Kati and were continuously overrun. I would say these are the relatives of Laban to whom Jacob went to visit, but that's another story, by these Assyrians, especially under Sargon II, about 720 B.C. According to Herodotus, the best of the tribe left the country shortly after a crushing defeat at the hands of Cyrus. Naturally, these Kati, as immigrants, must have joined up with other immigrants fleeing Asia Minor and the Near East. They settled at first in southern Germany, but later drifted northward. In 10 B.C., the German, or rather Roman general Drusus, in his third campaign against Germany, conquered a people called Kati or Kati, as one of the stronger tribes at that time and located in modern Hesse. Thus, the Kati or Kita became Keth or Heth and followed the change of TH for sibilant S, are now identified as Hessians. The Batavia, according to Tacitus, were regarded as a tribe of the Kati entering Europe about the time of the North Medic or Sarmatian stream following 521 B.C. and likewise entering southwest Germany. These Batavians appear to have developed apart from the Hessians and to have settled at the mouth of the Rhine, probably as Hollanders. Now, the early Babylonian Empire fell in 1750 B.C. to the Kassites of Elam, who, by the way, were the first to introduce the horse into the Middle East. Their dynasty, in turn, Kimavision. I mean, this guy just rolls on like Edgar Casey. I mean, he goes into a trance and goes back and writes history from 10,000 B.C. No footnotes. No nothing. Chemovision. I've never been tempted to take drugs, but if it gives a vision like this... This goes on and on and on. Following the house of Umri, the stone of destiny. The Sakasuni, Israel's trek westward, the second wave. Most of his facts are right. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
What's the point I'm making? Well, this stuff's been around a long time. How come nobody's been telling us? The origin of the Grecian Hercules. Or rather, Heracles. Now I'm out of Chemovision into Dan, the pioneer of Israel. The origin of the Grecian Hercules, or rather Heracles, as it is in Greek, seems to have been in the daring adventures and exploits of the Do you realize I've been reading nonstop over an hour? Nobody can listen that long. You're bored with that. You interested in this at all?
Yes, sir.
How many of you knew all this? How many of you got all this in your history that you were taught in school? All of you, huh? Not a cotton-picking one of you.